Hello and welcome to the HGKC podcast series, Finding Your North Star. Today is the fourth in our series of risk management in a crisis. For all businesses who have people that matter, employees, customers, suppliers and partners, these are the people that make everything happen and are at the core of what we do. We are all affected differently by these difficult times, and not all of us are equipped to deal with the scale of the impact and the change to our businesses. Today we have gathered as our guests three experts who support leaders and their people with a practical and compassionate approach to managing now and beyond the crisis. We're going to cover as many topics as we can today and offer some practical tips to help you successfully manage your people. I'm Kim Jones from HGKC, and I am delighted to welcome Lisa Jones from Headstrong Training, Sarah Wittick from Wittick Consulting, and Simon Kelly from X-Select. Welcome all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Nice to see you, Kim.
You too. So let's start with a round of introductions. Lisa, please can I start with you?
Of course. Thank you so much for having me today. I'm really excited to be here. So, as Kim has just said, my name is Lisa Jones. So I'm a psychotherapist and health coach, and my business, Headstrong Training, we partner organisations and help reduce stress in the workplace. Obviously, right now, the workplace means many different things to different people. Obviously, most of us are at home. And we do this by promoting positive mental health, building resilience and developing emotional intelligence. And there are various ways of doing that. Generally, it's through training. Again, right now, that has been adapted slightly, so online training is available. But again, consultancy, wellbeing surveys. And I generally work with a lot of HR and comms companies to kind of support staff, particularly at the moment. But generally, what I do is helping reduce stress in the workplace.
Well, I'm really looking forward to hearing more about that as we talk about how you apply it. So Sarah, please introduce yourself to our listeners today.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you very much for inviting me along. I provide a business law advisory service. So I help businesses, particularly SMEs, with their contractual requirements. So typically it's terms and conditions or documents related to share transactions or reading through supply agreements, that sort of thing. But the reason I'm here today is because historically I was an employment law specialist and I have continued to provide those advisory services to some clients. And of course, when the joyous furlough and job retention scheme came up, I had to rapidly get to grips with the ins and outs of that scheme, putting that into the employment law context that we all know. That's me in a nutshell.
Thanks very much. And Simon.
Yes, thank you, Kim. Good morning. My name is Simon Kelly. I'm Managing Director of X-Select. We're an independent whole of market insurance broker and employee benefit specialist based in Bristol. So whether you're a small company looking for private healthcare for the first time or a global business looking to improve benefit choice and communication around the world, X-Select can help. I set the business up 5 years ago. We've now got an expert team working on behalf of over 500 companies around the country. 100% of the business comes from word of mouth or recommendation, and we are the professional's choice when it comes to employee benefits, working with a wide network of HR companies, commercial insurance brokers, financial advisors, and others. I'm really, really proud of our mantra, everyone benefits. We live and breathe it, and testament to this, our client retention rate is over 97%. So I'm really, really delighted to be here, Kim. Thank you.
Oh, I'm sure you must be extraordinarily busy right now helping people. I'm looking forward to hearing a little bit more about that shortly.
A bit crazy, yeah.
I think it would be really useful to kind of set the context and start really with some of the current concerns. And I think it would be really good, Sarah, if you could set us off. Because we've seen lots of waves of advice about the government from the job retention scheme. There must be at least six updates since it started in March, and it would be really useful if you could help clarify the current position. And there's a lot going on around this written agreement. So what do employers really need to get right now?
Yeah, sure, no problem at all. As we all know, furlough is actually in the UK a completely new concept. It's come over, it's an American idea. So hence, I suspect the reason for the number of additions as we've gone along on the job retention scheme, and also is it was put into place very, very quickly. So there has been a huge learning curve for all of us, and plenty of debate even between the leading employment law specialists, which I've been trying to keep abreast of as well. But things are calming down slightly now. So I thought if I just outline five very basic tips to have in mind, because furlough is still continuing, it's still going on until June now. So if you do furlough someone, you need to ensure that they do not do any work at all. We've heard rumours of people answering, for example, customer emails. That's working. They mustn't be doing it. You know, even directors who furlough themselves have to be very careful about the actions that they undertake for their company. Selection for furlough, who do you select? It's very tough keeping everybody happy. So it's always a good idea to have in mind a basic selection criteria, a little bit like a redundancy criteria. And also don't forget, you can ease ill feelings if you're able to rotate your staff. We've got this 3-week rotation that's available for businesses, which can be helpful. You can introduce incentives if you think it might be appropriate. And also, if needs be, you can actually positively target those employees that might be more vulnerable or at risk. It is a justifiable action to take and place them on furlough. The bit in writing, yes, it has caused confusion. To be honest, it does actually make sense because you are making a temporary change to someone's contract, and any other temporary change or permanent change you get in writing normally. But obviously the government initial advice was just to say, give notice, let them know you put them on furlough. And then the directive came out and said, no, we want written agreement. And everyone, what? We all panicked a little bit. So I think the answer here is don't panic. I think if you are still making people furloughed on a rotational basis, make sure you do get some form of written agreement. It doesn't have to be a squiggle on a piece of paper. It can just be an email back to say, yes, understood, I agree. Something simple like that. For the people that you placed on furlough earlier and they continue to be on furlough, don't panic. Don't get them to sign it up in writing. All you need is a written record, and HMRC have confirmed that is what they will do. They will just want written notification, okay? They don't necessarily need written response.
Could that be something as easy as an email? Could that be something as basic as that?
Or a absolutely.
Text? You know, there's something that you can store digitally. Okay.
Yes, absolutely. And anything in writing. So if you're able to get a written agreement out, fantastic, or a letter, but email is absolutely fine as well. For example, I sent a couple of emails myself and just got the written acknowledgement back, following the guidance at the time. And then even I went, what, I've got to get agreement. And then I read their email and went, yes, it's okay. They did agree, it's fine. So, you know, even for myself, who's meant to be more in the know on the employment law side, it has been a massive learning curve and trying to get things right as well. Of course, you may have staff that are using other statutory entitlements, so maternity leave or sick leave. These are designed to be on their own, different furlough, so it's one or the other. So if someone was already on sick leave, not related to COVID, then you can put them on furlough if you want. It's up to you to choose which route to go. Same with maternity leave. If it is right, they can look to end that maternity leave earlier. Don't necessarily have to rely on the 8 weeks notice. You can agree and put them on furlough. Of course, it may depend how far through the maternity leave they are, if that's beneficial to them, when this ultimately will end. And we do have the SSP for COVID-related reclaim, that first 14 days you can reclaim
for. Well, that will really help firms, won't it, who are really struggling financially, because they can, you know, draw on all of the funding that's available from government right now.
Absolutely. And now people are starting to make the claims. I understand they're getting paid within 3 or 4 days once the claim's gone through HMRC. So it's actually quite a quick turnaround in terms of making the claim now, which is great for companies to keep their cash flow going. And the other big one that's been cropping up is holiday entitlement. You know, holiday can be taken if someone is on furlough, okay? But there are a couple of things to have in mind. If they do want to book it, that's fine. And if you agree to it, but it has to be 100% pay. So you can reclaim up to 80%, but you will do have to do the top up to the normal 100% worth of pay. You can stipulate people to take holiday during that time. A lot of employers might be worried, well, we all get back to normal and everybody says, I want to go on holiday now. And so it's managing that. There's a couple of things. One, you can stipulate as long as you give sufficient notice. Secondly, don't forget they're allowing this, the first 4 weeks of holiday entitlement to be carried over for the next couple of holiday years. So that can ease the pressure if need to be. Those are the sort of five basic tips. There's still a lot of unanswered questions out there, but those are just things to have in mind.
Oh, those are really useful. And I think that's a great point for you to pick up, Lisa, because there, you know, we've been talking about the current status of employees, whatever status they might be, work, furloughed. But, you know, you still have the same primary responsibilities, don't you, around the statutory and legal, particularly health and safety. So, you know, how can employers best support their people in this time?
It's such a good question, because you're right, absolutely. Employers do still have a legal responsibility to their employees, whether they are furloughed or not. So in terms of the practical, if we just look at the practical things briefly first. So I would say if they are not, you know, if employers aren't aware of kind of all the, the legalities, et cetera, around it, or perhaps aren't sure of the practicalities of, you know, health and safety requirements, et cetera, obviously speak to somebody, speak to an expert that can help them with that. But certainly there are still requirements in terms of physical well-being. So some members may need have this assessment carried out, and like I see, you know, that may be something they need to do. Also, if that's not possible, there are options for online training. You know, I have associates who provide online training, literally an hour that staff can access. That even if they're on furlough or not. Sorry, I kind of lost my train of thought a little bit there. That's an option. And then thinking about the staff members who are working or not, are they currently off, or have they been off on sick, for example, with any existing conditions, whether that's physical health, mental health related? If so, need to be very aware of that, need to make sure that there are processes in place to support those staff. And then I would say really the most important thing is keep the lines of communication open. So have regular check-ins, regularly, you know, ask your team, ask your staff, how are you? What, you know, what's going on for you? And bear in mind that everyone will be in a different situation. You know, so some people will be in very fortunate positions where they live in an environment that they have space. They might have an office in their home. They might have a spare room they can use. They might not have lots of distractions. They might not have young children that they're trying to homeschool, for example. Other people will not be in that situation. Other people will be in a one bed flat in a block of, you know, flats with no outside space and possibly children around it. And it's a very, very different set of pressures or stressors to try and manage. So I'd say, you know, for the employers, keep those lines of communication open, keep checking in, provide training where possible, because obviously if staff are furloughed, they are still allowed to take part in training. That's very important. I mean, certainly something that I would be recommending, just pitch for myself really, is that, you know, kind of whether it's a wellbeing survey or just a basic training on health and wellbeing. So just giving those tips and strategies that the individuals can also be aware of, to take that personal responsibility as well, because it's not just up to the employers. And just be, like I say, be mindful that everyone will be in a different circumstance and that everybody will respond differently. We are all individuals with different coping strategies, and you know what one person might find stressful, somebody else won't. So just to be very aware of that people will be coping and responding differently to the situation.
Well, the other thing we talked about in the past is you know, the risk assessment side of, you know, work from home and some of the concerns that, you know, employees have been raising as well around, you know, how that works, you know, what's different about being remote. Could you say something about that?
As in, from a risk assessment perspective?
Yeah, you know, that employers still have to do that. You know, how do they help employees, you know, if they've got to work from home, for instance, from computers or use their own kit, that type of thing.
I'll be honest, I am not an expert in health and safety law,
no.
but certainly I know a lot of employers are providing, you know, equipment for their staff. I mean, the basics, I would say the ensuring that staff have the knowledge and the training, the awareness of how they should be best working from home or remotely. So in terms of, you know, where their screen should be, how they should be, you know, sitting, the kind of environment they should be in, all of those things, obviously the encouraging regular breaks, and just having those support processes in place. But I'd say for people that already have existing conditions, and they will be needing risk assessments, you know, to ensure that they can work as safely as possible.
Thanks, Lisa. That's really, really useful. Simon, if I could turn to you now, you know, you've been running employee assistance, you know, programs for a long time, so you've got a very unique perspective around how employers, you know, support their people. And this is a very specific time. So, you know, what are you seeing? You know, how can employers best support their people from your perspective?
Yeah, thanks, Kim. I think it's safe to say we are in uncharted waters. We'll never see, fingers crossed, we'll never see anything like this again. And this pandemic seems to be causing worry and fear in every aspect of our lives, whether that's home, whether it's work, it's everywhere. I mean, at this time, I think it's critical for employees to access employee assistance programs where they have access to them. An EAP, an employee assistance program, can help, because talking through worries and concerns with somebody independent can help put them into some form of perspective and help manage the feelings and emotions, creating strategies and approaches that will help you or the person, the employee, to regain a sense of control and remove uncertainty. EAPs can help employees by providing a place to discuss issues, fears, emotions and concerns, and fast access to specialist counsellors is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And support can also be arranged in the form of face-to-face counselling sessions, although I have to say at the moment face-to-face isn't really possible, so kind of remote counselling seems to kind of be the norm at the moment. I would expect that to be the case for the next year, 18 months or so. So getting access to experts like Lisa really, I think, is the key. That said, the format of telephone and digital counselling works just as well as face-to-face, helping to tackle kind of emotional issues. EAPs also provide invaluable legal and financial information from specialists and partners. They can help with debt legislation changes, new benefit rules, providing information that might alleviate some of the fear and stress that the pandemic's bringing. They're often also a free add-on to paid benefits and services, and without actually having a specialist review of the benefits that might be in place, it's not uncommon for an employer to be completely unaware that they have access to these services. Just as an example, I had a new client contact me last week to buy a standalone EAP, but when I investigated their current employee benefit packages, they actually already had access to two EAPs that were free with an existing benefits.
Yeah, I think it's a very misunderstood area, isn't it, of you know, what the whole range of services that are now available, you know, under your kind of programs.
Yeah, and as Lisa just touched on, the other issue here is that when somebody procures an EAP, they might just buy it for the sake of covering their duty of care for mental health in the workplace. But the key is actually communicating this benefit, especially in this this impossible time, is actually communicating this benefit to the people that are going to need it the most. Make sure that employees are aware of it, send out information as regularly as possible, to ensure that kind of stays on their radar. If there are free resources, apps, etc., just make sure that they know about them.
It's a great cornerstone, isn't it, as part of your comms program with your people while they're away, because you can keep reminding them and sending out new things, and without it feeling like too onerous.
Absolutely. And it's just as an awareness thing, the EAP is one of the lowest cost employee benefits that you can buy, but in my personal view, it's probably the most important.
Yeah, I think value for money, they're definitely seeing that right now. So we've talked a lot about employees. Let's consider the managers and the leaders a little in our conversation. You know, they probably need a bit more support managing their teams during this kind of lockdown. And I think one of the main concerns that I've been coming across is that they're not used to the remote working and having their teams further away from them. So it would be really good to get some kind of advice or guidance for managers sort of struggling with this kind of situation. So Lisa, would you like to kind of open up with that for us as a conversation?
Yes, sure. And it's such a good question, because it's kind of that that the premise or the idea that, you know, who's there for you? You know, if you're the leader, if you're the boss, if you're the person that's kind of managing everybody else, who do you then turn to? In the same way that, for example, you know, as a therapist, I have to have supervision. That's part of, you know, because that's part of the process. So that question, you know, who is there for them? Again, as Simon's just talked about, there are many, many services that are available where that might be externally. So ensure that they have all the information that they need. So if they're looking for emotional and mental well-being support, that they know where they can turn to get that support. So whether that's privately through, you know, therapists, counsellors, coaches, whoever, or whether it's through the EAP service that might be there, mental health first aiders, there's a whole wealth of, you know, private medical insurance, you know, healthcare cover where people can access support as well. There, and obviously Simon would be able to explain all of that much better than I would. But there are lots of avenues for support out there. And from a practical perspective, you know, again, I always kind of come back to this, keep the lines of communication open. So whether that's keeping in touch with, you know, HR, having that support, you know, just be, you know, man is an island. They might be the leader, but that doesn't mean that they have to do it all themselves, you know, so reach out, take the support that's there. And like I say, so that might be from an HR perspective, it might be from other members of your team, whether that's, you know, in your accounts department or wherever it might be. So all of those different areas that you're going to need help and support with. But reach out, you know, accept that we can't do it all. We don't have all of the answers, you know, and don't be afraid to ask for help.
That's great. You know, have you anything to add there as well, Sarah or Simon, from your perspectives? It would be good to have your views too.
I'd just say communication is certainly key, but don't forget the downward communication with your team. You know, don't be afraid to have Zoom or pick up the phone if you're working remotely, because as there is a theme running through here, communication. So if you've got an idea, put it out to the team like you probably would normally do so, just obviously learning to do it in a different way. But for the guys working on site, you know, just double check their working environment, you know, working from home, just checking all the equipment's there, and keeping an eye on the hours that people are working. Just these regular catch-ups is really useful for you to stay in touch with people, really. And also don't forget to look at the training side of things. So the guys that are on furlough, you can still stay in touch with them, you can still speak to them, see how they are, check in, you know, give them training information, that sort of thing. So it's a downward communication is just as important.
Yeah, I think sometimes that we forget that, you know, managers have managers.
Yeah. Mm. I would completely agree. And just going a bit further on from what Sarah's just said, I think we can expect that this way of working will become the new normal. For a year, 18 months, maybe possibly even longer term. So people's desire to work from home, I think now that they've had some sight of it, there may be more of an expectation from them to be doing more of that. And businesses are going to have to adapt in order to support them. And that will mean, you know, as Lisa touched on earlier, making sure the DSE stuff is done, making sure employers are not leaving themselves open for the inevitable tribunals that might come if we're not doing the things that we should be doing. But from a downwards communications perspective, I think regular online conversations, I mean, one of the things we implemented fairly quickly into this home working was a daily wake and shake meeting. It's mandatory for people to be there from 9:30 every day. And in that, we're not using it for any other reason other than to celebrate success, overcome objections, discuss workload, just have a check-in. And that very quickly has become the highlight of people's day when working remotely. So I think that will become the normal.
I think so too. We've got to think a lot longer. So we'll talk about the transition shortly, but I just wanted to ask you before we do that, you know, what are you seeing in terms of when things are going wrong, the unplanned? You must have some observations that you've been gathering from your clients around how people are coping with the unplanned and the unexpected, you know, what strategies are you recommending to them? Would you like to carry on, Simon, as you've just been speaking?
Yeah, certainly. So when things go wrong for us, it's unfortunately linked to health, being in the health and protection environment. So we are having to deal with some very difficult conversations about people that have been affected directly or indirectly by COVID-19. Other businesses that are struggling in terms of being able to pay premiums and things like that. So we are daily speaking to providers, trying to negotiate payment holidays, trying to promote the services that are available to employers every day. We're literally firefighting, trying to support.
And are you seeing that as well, Lisa, Sarah?
Yes. So really the main thing obviously I see is the stress levels. So, and the way people are coping. So, because naturally in a situation such as this, any situation that is uncertain, that's the biggest stressor for anyone as a human being. Yeah. You know, that's kind of just, so of course, being in a situation where things are uncertain, they are unknown. Of course, people are reporting much higher levels of stress, anxiety. You know, people are turning to probably less healthy coping strategies. And like you say, the difficulty then for teams, because obviously morale will be affected as well. You know, you will get the people that are kind of being, and of course, because everyone will be in a different place on this journey. So you'll get those who are kind of going, yep, I can make the most of this. Let's go for it. I'm thriving. I'm doing it. And you'll get those who are at the complete other end of the spectrum who are struggling to get out of bed in the morning. Because it's like, it's too much. They don't want, you know, what's the point? That kind of thing. So just being really aware of that everyone is going to be in a different place. But I think certainly for managers and for leaders and businesses, trying to manage that, especially remotely when you're not there, you know, in the office or in that environment where you can say, you know, should we just pop out for a coffee? Why don't we just go and have a walk and talk? You know, like, let's go and have a chat or whatever. It's much harder to manage that. You know, so just being aware of those things really, and but that's certainly what I'm noticing. It's those challenges around, okay, how do we make sure that our staff are okay, how do we get them to continue to engage, and how can we ensure that they are actually looking after themselves and that, you know, the employers are doing what they can to support them. And it's a really tough one.
Yeah. And are you seeing sort of issues as well, Sarah? They might be more legal.
Yeah, it's been more legal, really. Mm. There was the initial influx when furlough started off, and we were all trying to work out the various strategies for the different businesses that we help. You know, some are engineering, some are in nurseries, some are office-based. Is, you know, what could they and couldn't they do? Panicking about trying to pay their staff and, you know, working it in line with the general employment law requirements that we have. So it really was trying to stay calm in the face of a storm, really.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, also just saying to people, look, this is going to change. And lots of businesses are very understanding. So whenever there was a change, I was immediately out there sort of telling them, look, what I told you last week actually is now wrong. That's a bit awkward. But, you know, it was trying to keep on top of it and then keeping people informed. And they all understand, they knew it was a changing situation. And luckily, the majority of things, it was minor tweaks to the plans and strategies they were putting in place.
Yeah.
So I think for employers, actually, the 3-week rotation was a massive relief for them, because it meant that they could manage their staff better. And there are other things that have gone along and become more helpful in terms of managing the situation. Because right at the beginning, before the furlough scheme, everyone was saying, well, I'm going to have to lay people off. So we were looking at temporary layoffs and short-term working clauses and things like that, which are still potentially going to be important later on anyway.
Yeah, you know, and I think, I mean, that's a good lead-in, really, to start thinking about transition in the future. I mean, it might be a very elongated period, but I think, you know, let's set a little context here. What's the NHS and going to look like, you know, post-COVID? What's the non-essential procedure list going to look like? You know, how well are our workforce going to be? what's the waiting list likely to be? What's the stress in people that we've built up and the illnesses we've got behind that? You know, we might have an awful lot of people on sick leave. You know, we might have a lot of people who are impaired in their performance through mental health and other issues. You know, or, you know, the loss of family members. You know, they're going to be very different place that they've been started this sort of crisis of where they're going to end up. So it would be just to do a bit of, you know, future gazing. You know, it's thinking about the possible impact and what measures and advice we can offer people to start thinking about that, you know, to guide their thinking. So it would be interesting, Sarah, to explore that in terms of, you know, the impact on return to work, either partial or remote, or, you know, from that sort of legal framework kind of view as well. So, you know, could you give us a few thoughts on that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, obviously the biggest thing will be, well, what happens when the furlough scheme ends? So you've got two aspects there. One, getting your workforce back in, assuming you can still afford to maintain your workforce as normal. And obviously all the health and safety requirements about a safe working environment and, you know, checking what is available. And, you know, there is guidance out there to say some of the basic things to have in place. And obviously people are looking at rotating staff hours and breaks, space within their environments, you know, the basic antibacterial stuff. So that's one side of it. So come June, I don't think we're all going to be jumping on in the car and going back. It's going to have to be a managed process. So how do you put that in place? And then obviously the other side of it is, come June, the funding ends, but I have no money coming in. Yeah. So you obviously have to look at potentially making cuts or changes to your workforce. And that is really important to actually now start to forward plan even now, because depending on numbers involved, if you have to, for example, make redundancies, you could be looking at 30, 45 days, even 90 days. You know, so we've heard some news recently, I think it was British Airways, 12,000 staff.
Yeah.
That's a massive redundancy exercise. A lot of us won't be in that position, but even one or two people you have to plan for. It's also worth checking your employment contracts, because if you still have to do a temporary layoff or short term, you know, have you got to negotiate a pay cut to continue through the next few months in the year? So now is the time to start planning what you need to do in relation to those wages, basically.
Okay, that's a really...
Does your contract help you or not?
Yeah, and it's really useful to think, get people to think about, you know, their worst case scenarios, you know, and work back.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's really useful. Lisa, I mean, I know in this well-being perspective is really important right now, and how best businesses can respond. So some of your thoughts about how they extend from what they're doing now into the future would be useful.
Well, I'm hoping that, because obviously there are many companies out there who are really on board with the kind of health and well-being agenda and are very forward thinking. There are those who perhaps are not as much. So I am very much hoping that this will bring to light actually the importance of health and well-being in the workplace, you know, from an organizational perspective and an individual perspective. And really, I would say prevention is better than intervention, always. You know, obviously as a therapist, by the time somebody's coming to see me, they're not in a great place. You know, and actually if we can upskill all of us, so that's, you know, everyone in an organization, but all of us individually, and upskill us, so we have those strategies, we have those tools, we have those, you know, healthier coping mechanisms and understand how to manage stress, how to keep ourselves healthy. And that is everything from our brains, our minds, our physical health, our mental health, our emotional health. It is all connected. And that's something that's often kind of overlooked, that everything is actually connected. You know, and if we can be upskilled so that when we are coming, you know, having to change our routine again, having to adapt again to another set of new normal circumstances, that we're more equipped to do so from that kind of well-being perspective, so that it doesn't feel, because we can't, unfortunately, you know, none of us are immune to stress. We cannot go through life without experiencing some sort of stressful event. But the better equipped we are to manage it, obviously, you know, the better for us in the long run. And also from that, the perspective of, you know, from a team perspective, you know, having that kind of that camaraderie, almost building up that team morale, that, you know, we're all in it together. And actually, you know, what can we, if we've got the knowledge and the understanding, we can support ourselves, we can support each other much more effectively. Yeah. And then, you know, and prevent issues from becoming much more serious potentially. And that's from, like I say, an emotional, mental and physical health and well-being perspective.
That's really useful. So if we can think of, you know, how we develop a sustained plan, how do we sustain this kind of, you know, bringing together of people so that they can carry it on. I heard a fantastic example from one of the hospitals, which is called Silver Lining. Their initiative is called Silver Linings. Mm-hmm. So it's about, you know, protecting the people, how they feel at the end of the shift. So, you know, they get together and they have a place and they have some digital and they have it in the room as well, or in real space, and they have a room they can go to. And it's all about looking after them to, you know, decompress after a day on the ward. Absolutely. Which is, you know, really about, and they started it before this happened. Mm. And they're going to, you know, so it's in this thing that's, you know, they've wanted to do long term, but it's been so powerful.
Absolutely.
Because they've had access to it because they've been running it a few months beforehand. Absolutely. Those kind of things, yeah. Seeing those sort of dot all over our working, good working practices will be invaluable.
Yes, absolutely.
And Simon, you're going to see some very specific changes, I think, you know, in terms of opportunities for, you know, how the private sector is going to be able to support the recovery of the nation and also protect our NHS. Some of your thoughts would be really useful on this.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. I'll just add some context before I think it's going to be quite a short answer in terms of how I think it's going to support. But when you think about the NHS, there are a couple of areas that have been specifically affected. Acute care and people with long-term conditions. So within acute care, we've seen widespread changes to the purpose of hospitals themselves. Whole units being given across for COVID-19, operating theatres being turned into intensive care units, staff not previously specialising in respiratory or critical care repositioned for this emergency. And the NHS obviously enlisted the entire private sector to increase its critical care capacity. As a landscape for the NHS, it's completely unrecognisable. And amid all this change, the backlog of long-term conditions, treatment, outpatients and elective care is developing. And I'm not saying it was perfect before COVID. I mean, we were still looking at long-term waiting lists. I've seen a year, 18 months for some non-essential treatments and procedures. And for people with long-term conditions, I mean, the emphasis of COVID-19 has detracted completely from those groups of patients, vulnerable people with respiratory, diabetes, cancer, heart. All these people have kind of just been put to the side and been classified as less important, not important, but less important. So the NHS post COVID-19 looks pretty scary, pretty difficult. They've done an absolutely amazing job, and I think we can all agree that they're doing a fantastic job. But post COVID-19, the NHS looks quite scary. And how the private sector can support, I don't have a crystal ball, but I certainly think that when you've got an independent, privately run organisation that can support the NHS in the way that it has done for many, many years, that we will see an unprecedented spike in the demand for people looking for ways to bypass the waiting list. So I think it absolutely can support, and I'm not using this by any stretch as a sales opportunity. I just think that it will be there. The opportunity will be there for the private sector to support.
That's really useful. Thanks. I think it would be really good just to get one last thought from each of you about a practical that you might like to share from your perspective. Something to think about in terms of, you know, it's all about your people and keeping that focus about them.
Sure. Shall I start?
Yeah, go on, Sarah.
Okay. I think the tip really is just to try and keep up to date as best you can with the furlough requirements. There are still lots of unanswered questions out there. You know, for example, can you hold this? What notice pay would you have to do if you paid a dismissal? All that sort of thing. Look, if in doubt, just get advice. There are lots of go-to places anyway on for initial information. For example, ACAS is a good starting point. But most employment advisors, they will more than likely be happy to have an initial chat with you and then establish what, if anything else, needs to be done after that. So just don't be afraid to pick up the phone if you are confused or concerned or worried about anything you've done in relation to your workforce and employment law.
Oh, that's a great tip. Thank you. And you, Lisa?
I would say communicate.
That's a great mantra, for us all to live by.
Absolutely. And just, you know, from a practical perspective, if you haven't already, make sure that you've got regular one-to-ones booked in the diary, have those, you know, in the diary, and be open and transparent with your communication. You know, like I said, we don't cope well with uncertainty. To be honest with your staff, be honest with your team. You know, they appreciate that you might not have all the answers, but you know, they will feel much better if they kind of know what they are dealing with or what to expect to some degree. So just keep on communicating.
That's a great one. And Simon, do you have a last thought?
Yeah, mine would be review the benefits that you've got in place, look for opportunities to support your employees. And if you haven't got an employee assistance program, absolutely buy one. And as Lisa said, communicate the hell out of it.
That's great. Thank you so much. Well, thank you for an informative and really practical discussion about managing and supporting your employees and your managers during these difficult times. You've given us some great thoughts about where people can start, where they can prepare, and also to start thinking about the future with some optimism, because they can be practical and plan for it. It's been absolutely fantastic to have this conversation this morning. I've learned so much new stuff that I think I can use. So thank you guys, you're amazing experts in your field, and I'm looking forward to being able to share this podcast at hgkc.co.uk/podcast, and it will be available for you to listen to again. So thanks very much. This has been, it's all about your people. Bye for now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Cheers.